Anyway, nice to be with you again. There was a question that came through the chat. How do I know if I'm aware of the breath or focused on the breath? And I think the question is more like, what is focus and how much focus do you need? That's perhaps a kind of more considered question. So like, If I have a glass of water here, and if the glass was brimming full, then I'd need a lot of focus to put it down so it wouldn't spill, right? So I'm aware that I need to be very, very focused because there's so much water. But if I pick up this clock, it's much easier and I can just put the clock down. I don't really need that much focus, correct? I lost your video. You froze on me, are you? We're frozen too. Hold on. What do you think's going on? My hand is in midair.
The audio is okay.
Audio is okay, so you heard me muttering away here. But I can see my video, I'm frozen. Gosh, what happened? So what's that? Is that them or us? Oh, that's Vipassi. He's my man. Vipassi Samanera will be a bhikkhu, 19th of December. Oh, now I'm on. Okay. So back to that. So you got that analogy. So the water, because it's very full, I need to be focused. But I can be aware of how much focus I'm using. I take the clock, or like the lovely bell that I was given last year. I'm just learning how to hit it again. So I have to be very careful. I have to just swing it to get a good sound. So I need more focus because it's a delicate kind of thing. So, the question you might ask, well, how much focus do I need? And then I think you always have to go back to why we're meditating, why we're doing this work. And so our reference is Four Noble Truths and the understanding of dukkha. So we need enough focus and awareness to make conscious any kind of dukkha that's arising in the present moment. So we need present moment awareness. So focus, you can think of focus as focus on an object, which is good, but also you can think of focus in the to stay present in the moment, right? That's a kind of focus. Rather than being scattered, I'm in the moment, and that's not necessarily dependent on an object. And then I can do both. I can use an object, stay focused on it, to help me stay in the present moment. But if I have a capacity to be in the present moment and it's fairly natural, then maybe I don't have to focus on an object that much. You know, so what you find is when you're very scattered and your mind is really, really busy or whatever, you need more focus because you can't stay in the present moment. But once you have that capacity to stay in the present moment, your need to focus falls away and you find a more relaxed attitude, just quite naturally. You don't have to hold on, so much. So that's going to depend on each meditation, how much experience you have, what you're going through now, and so on. So that then if you always take it back to the reason or, why are we meditating, not just to get some kind of pleasant result, but we want to lay a foundation for understanding dukkha, and then understanding the Four Noble Truths and abandoning craving, the craving for objects. So then you see awareness and focus are working together to reach that understanding. So always these kinds of questions, if you take them back to panya and the reason we're doing this work, it's about understanding suffering. Or as Lopo Sumedho says, standing under suffering, making it conscious. So if you have a strong sense of presence in the moment, in the ordinary, and some kind of discontent or a sense of lack or an annoyance or whatever comes into consciousness, you're with it very quickly because your sati is quite strong and quite constant and quite in the present moment. And because you have, you know, you're attentive, when it arises, you have a better chance of not getting lost in the object, it's just an object, and then it ceases, right? And so you have a kind of freedom from these kinds of things. If your sati isn't strong, right, and you're not really investigating Four Noble Truths, then of course it becomes more problematic. So if you take everything back to that, and then say, how much focus do I need, say, with the arising of defilement, kilesa, such as anger or fear or these kinds of things? Well, the defilement isn't really the emotion itself. It's always the attachment, right? It's the sense of self, the atavada. So how much focus do you need to notice the arising of ego thought, self-thinking, me and my thinking? So that becomes the question for each of us. And is my audio still okay? My video's frozen.
Very good.
It's still okay?
Very good.
Okay, great. So the question, you know, because I've been emphasizing awareness rather than focus, it's not mutually exclusive. It's both. So expect like the earlier meditation where I said, make your mind spacious, then bring more focus, right? Feel the body, then feel the breath, then feel the nostrils, then feel the temperature, the in-breath and out-breath. And what I was doing, it was an experiment in focus, you know, focusing down. And then I suggest go out again. And then once you just experiment in that way, you can change the intensity of your focus depending on the situation. Okay, how's that? You're still there, huh? We're freezing up video, but audio's going. Okay, good. You know, it's interesting. Teaching your group is quite fun because sometimes, like teaching the Sangha of bhikkhus, they all close their eyes and they all sit there. I don't know if they're alive or not sometimes. So, you know, I'm saying something, I'm looking around. Is anyone there? You guys still here? I've lost you. But that's what monks are supposed to do. I don't know why. You know, we can't look. I don't know why. This is, to me, very strange as a speaker. But your group is great because you take notes. So I see you're alive, right? And it then, and you know, as a speaker, I don't quite know what is effective or not. You know, when you're teaching, you don't quite know, is this hitting the mark or not, right? Because I don't have your perceptions. But with you, you're great, because every now and then everyone takes a note. And I say, oh, that was good. So very helpful. And so thank you. Yeah, thank you for that. Being a teacher is a funny old thing, isn't it? Some of you, I'm sure you do teaching too. And did anyone hear me out there? So back to focus, right? So do experiment. But one of the things which I find problematic with Theravada Buddhism is this language of absorption in English. And I don't know how do you translate that in Thai? You know, how we use this word absorption. You've seen it in the samadhi. What's the Thai translation of that? Do you have a Thai translation? Anyone?
Sometimes we use fast abiding.
Okay, that's not absorption. Yeah, that's different. Okay, anyway. Yeah, so in my sense of it is, you're not trying to focus on an object and exclude all other objects. in meditation, because that to me would seem you're attached to some aspect of the khandhas, but you're using the khandhas to sustain awareness of non-attachment, right? So that's why the language, again, I don't know how it works with Thai or English, but for me in English, awareness with the breath is different, and it may not sound different to you, but in my own perceptual universe, awareness with the breath is different than awareness on the breath. I mean, it's just a word, but for me that emphasizes more that I'm practicing awareness with whatever's going on. So awareness with anicca sanya, I'm always emphasizing the awareness. So then I can use more focus, I can use less focus, but I have the awareness to see what the effect is. So you can experiment, you know, really do anapanasati very strictly, like count each out breath, focus really hard and see what result does that come. For many people, that result creates a lot of tension. So they have to make their focus less strong. They have to make it more open and relaxed. And you can only learn about that by experimenting. So just experiment, try stuff out and see, okay, what's the result? And that very attitude of experimentation is the way of mindfulness and investigation, isn't it? You're not just doing a technique and hoping that if I watch my breath, somehow I'll get enlightened. Why? Why is that necessarily true? There's not necessarily wisdom there, right? There might be if you're investigating, but you know, maybe you're just pacifying the mind and then everything explodes when you walk away from the meditation path. So like Lompa Cha used to joke about things like that. He said, you think sitting, it's just about sitting still. He said, well, the Kwai just stands still all night, all day, out in the sun. You know, they don't have wisdom. So it's not just about like holding on, and it's about intelligence, actually. Panya is intelligence. And where the intelligence manifests is around dukkha. When you feel discontent, then that's where you try to make it conscious and see where is the problem. And then you get to the attachment to tanha and the letting go of tanha. And then everything proceeds from that. So when the question the person gives is what's the difference between awareness and focus? Well, it's both. You need both. You need focus, but you need to be aware of the focus. All right. So thanks for that question. That was quite helpful. So in the last episode of this drama, the Dhamma drama of Rai Punyavi, we were doing what? We were doing this sense of questioning. And this is a very strong in the Zen tradition, in the Chan tradition. So the question I was putting to you was intended to bring attention to silence. So when I was saying that I am aware, yeah? Because you make that statement, I am aware, and then you stop, and then you investigate. There is awareness, yes. There is consciousness, yes. Okay. Is there an entity or a little bit or something that is aware? Or is there just awareness? Now that's not a philosophical Buddhist conclusion that I'm asking you to undertake. You know, I'm not asking you to believe anything there, but I am asking maybe to question an assumption around the sense of self-identity that we very much challenge in Buddhist teaching around anatta and paticca-samuppada. And this is one way to challenge that, rather than, because it's a very difficult teaching, anatta, right? I mean, it's really weird. No other religion really has that, I don't think. Not as you know, maybe there are like transcendent realizations, but as a kind of foundation stone for investigation. And the clue is investigation. You think, well, what's the Buddha talking about anatta? Well, I'm certainly here. right? And, you know, my knees hurt, not your knees. And I drank my coffee. You didn't drink my coffee. So it certainly seems that I'm here. And so then you start to question the I am, because you know consciousness is there, right? That's for sure. That's a given. And then I have pain, or I am angry, or I don't like her, or I like him, or you know, there's liking, yes. There is disliking, yes. There is hunger, yes. There is emotion, yes. And that extra bit, is that there? And that's where you put the question that cannot be answered, that brings you to silence, right? And then you hold the mind in that silence. The difficulty is you look for an answer as soon as you ask a question. So the other way to do that is, as I was saying, through anicca sanya. Notice change, take sound, and then what's changing and what's unchanging? It's the same silence. It's the same knowing. It's the same consciousness. Huh? So when you have like a very strong sense of self running because you're upset about something, or there's some difficulty your family is facing and you're really worried about it, you can use that to silently witness the emotion and not grasp the storyline of self. I mean, you still have to deal with it, sure, and you have to think it through functionally. But you know how the mind can just run with something? You're really worried and it just goes off, and or you're really resentful, or there's a lot of self-criticism. You can put that question in and say, well, who's angry? And that's a very strong sense of mindfulness, that now you know anger is an object. You see it running with the thought. Now you're focused on something which is rather curious. Well, who is angry? Well, I am, that idiot. They did this to me and then no. That's thought. Well, who is angry? Where's the sense of I? And that is a very interesting practice which can constantly bring you back to silence. You can't probably say this to your relatives. You know, they'll just think you're goofy. You know, it takes a kind of meditative mind and appreciation to explore that. And in that exploration, you're coming back to the same awakened consciousness again and again and again. So it's not like Venerable Vipassi had just read in a book, you need more than mindfulness. Yes, yeah, you need more than awareness. Yes, you need panya. You need intelligence. You need to investigate. You need sila, dana. You need kwam oton and all these other things. But it seems to me where it's bringing, it must be bringing us to the same place, right? And that same place is awakened awareness or awakened consciousness or sati sampajanya. And then it seems to me there's really nothing to do. There's still to do socially. There's still to do to take care of the body and take care of responsibilities. But there's no further to go because you cannot get behind sati sampajanya. There's no place behind awakened awareness. There's no place beyond it. And so that's why I say you really trust that. But you'll find your lack of trust in that is where the defilements come up, worry, doubt, anxiety, and they're the things that fool you. And as I said, they kidnap you, don't they? You got to understand this, and all of a sudden, you get kidnapped by some of these powerful vipaka kammas, and then you start again, and you start it again and again and again. And so Lopa Samego is a great inspiration to us because, you know, he started with a very, very busy mind. He wasn't sort of super upeka right from the start. He had a very busy mind, and he would say one of his biggest problems was doubt, his thinking mind, doubting all the time and not trusting. And of course, he's worked at it for many, many years. And now when you talk with him, there's not much going on in terms of thought. he doesn't believe in thought, and thought hardly comes up. And that, and in that you can sense the beauty of the man, right? The compassion and the silence and the power and the capacity to respond to life in a very beautiful way. But it's taken a lot of work, right? It's taken a lot of work. And so that's why when I hear his, you know, we all listen to his talks now that Ajahn Asoka puts on the web for us. And I really listen carefully. And now he's just, you know, he's saying it's about consciousness. Just trust in that. Very simple. They're very simple. And I ask myself, you know, we all say, okay, here's a man that's dedicated to the path 50 years. And why does he keep coming back to that? He doesn't, you know, like the complex part, I experienced him as a younger teacher, and he taught, like he one year at Chithurst, he taught Paticchasamuppada all year, which is great. It was, you know, it was really, really good. But it's interesting now, he doesn't go to those formula, the lists and all of that, which we all learn as young monks. And it's this very, very direct and confident teaching about awakened consciousness, awakened awareness. But all those lists and all those analyses are very, very helpful to get the foundation right, intellectually, emotionally, socially, gives you the foundation from which you can witness the truth of that, the truth of that. And this is where like focus comes in. You know, you have to learn how to have a meditation object you can focus on so that you can calm the mind. But then it's not just about that. It's about that refuge in Buddha knowing Dhamma. So I think that's sasufi, as they say in French, that's enough. Shall we do some meditation? And maybe I'll just speak to that, what they call huato, I think, in Chinese, or the who am I in Advaita Vedanta, or this different way. Maybe we'll use that. So please take a meditative posture. We'll sit again for 45 minutes. So if you speak of focus, you could say focus in the present moment, or collectedness in the present moment, or composure, these kinds of words. And the way you can do that is through simple exercises of listening. So if you listen, and then it's not so much about the sound, it's about collected, composed, present. And then feel your whole body awareness. And the body is in awareness. Bodily feelings are in awareness. And then the language of non-desire, so non-anticipation or non-becoming, nowhere to go. And then non-resistance, welcoming all things. So establish this wholesome attitude all the time. So then introduce this simple question, say, go to listening. And then say, I am listening. The listening is there. Now, can you find an I, an extra thing called a me? So you have to observe very quietly. So you might think, well, it's the observer. Okay, then look at the observer. So what do you find? I find the flow of knowing. Who is the I that found that? It's a way of speaking. And this question takes you to the limit. You can't get behind that question. And then you could just abide in that knowing for the whole 45 minutes. And then each time the mind started to bring up memories or thought, when you notice that, you could say, who is thinking? And then that would bring you to the same silent attention. And now you're not really trying to find anything. You're noticing what is actually there. And then your mind might think again, and then you say, who's thinking? So give that a go, or use what works for you, and interject this, if you want, into the thinking process, if it comes. Yeah, experiment, see how that goes. So we'll sit quietly for the rest of the session. So, is that interesting? Again, that you can't do that at a dinner party. Who's eating? They think you're crazy. So these are the subtle things when you're a meditator that you appreciate, and that capacity to inquire. That's what I love about Buddhism. That it's not a dogma that I have to believe, but it's an offering from this fabulous being, the Buddha, to reflect upon. And that's the way I've always been taught, not to believe in Buddhism, not to dismiss it either, but to actually use my intelligence, but direct my intelligence according to his teaching. And then his disciples, Lompa Cha and Lompa Sumedho. And that's the sort of duty we have to the teaching, is actually not to believe it, not to disbelieve it either, but to say, well, what does that mean when we don't really know, rather than just nod our heads, yes, anicca, dukkha, anatta, and Four Noble Truths, so that our intelligence is alive with Dhamma. And then even if situations are like difficult, we can always go back, Four Noble Truths, what's the problem, what's the attachment? It's brilliant. It's really, really brilliant. And then when there is no real problem, when there's no discontent, then we sustain this faith and panya in the quiet mind, in the still mind. And where that takes us, we don't know. We just have to let it open up to what it opens up. So I think we'll conclude then, right? I'll leave you for the day. And keep going, as they say, and we'll see you on your evening. Okay.